Door Number 8 by Francis Rosenfeld. Door Number 8. The Forbidden Door of Wish and Desire. Whoa, what's on fire? Taylor woke up the next morning to painful, unholy banging on the door. What's gotten into Christine, and why doesn't she just come in? She knows the lock doesn't work. She stumbled towards the door, nursing a bear of a headache, surprised to see that somebody had already repaired the broken lock. The door burst wide open, slamming into the wall, and in came Matthew, carrying a giant pizza, steaming hot. The sheer amount of meat on top of it was enough to make Taylor's stomach revolt. Wake up, man. Coach is going to bench you if you're late again. I brought help, your favorite, meat lovers. Edge to edge, my friend. He stared at Taylor, who was about to protest on behalf of vegans everywhere, and a doubtful look appeared on his face. What on earth are you wearing? Taylor looked down to find out what was wrong with her pink jersey pajamas, and was shocked to notice a pair of unusually large and very hairy legs emerging from their bottom. Listen, man, Matt said, his doubtful look settling into a stable frown. Whatever happened last night, I don't want to know. Poor Jessica, is it her pajama? What's that have to do with Jessica? Am I male? Taylor mumbled, staring at her hands, wide-eyed, feeling as if she was watching a train come straight at her, while unable to move. Whatever you were on last night, drink some coffee and walk it off, and pray to the deity of your choosing, that Coach doesn't find out about it. So, I'm male. Taylor continued blabbing incoherently. How long have I been male? She asked the worst question of them all. Ever since I can remember. Matt indulged him, eyeing his friend eagerly and trying to assess if the current state warranted the trip to the emergency room, which was sure to get them both kicked off the team. Listen, I left a little early last night, and I don't know what brought about this state. Can you remember what you took? You don't look so well. Taylor turned around to see herself in the mirror, and was welcomed by a face that had become familiar. Dark hair, glasses, wispy beard. Her face was looking very strange indeed, wide-eyed as it was, and paired with pink pajamas. Oh, no, he didn't. She blew her top instantly. If I ever get my hands on him. She started, and then remembered that if she nursed any hope to get back to her normal female state, her neighbor was her only chance. She looked at Matt, who stared back, concerned. Taylor assessed it would be a fool's errand to try to knock that door down with questions about her gender, so she chose the next best approach. Listen, do you remember my neighbor, the guy in room number 8? She asked, only to see the worry in her friend's eyes grow to epic levels. That's it, man. We're going to the doctor, and you better be sick, cause if we miss the rest of the season for no good reason, I will never forgive you. What did I say? Taylor walked back the comment, not sure what was wrong with it. Please indulge me, I know I'm a little weary this morning. There is no guy in room number 8, dude. You live in room number 8, you have since you arrived to this college. He saw the incredulous look in his friend's eyes and continued. Check it out for yourself if you don't believe me. Taylor opened her door again to certify that, indeed, it was marked with the number 8. There had been an improvement, however. The number was fastened through the top, like any normal person would expect, and was hanging plumb, perfectly perpendicular to the floor. Well, your parents are here, I'll let them decide, Matt excused himself, happy to be let off the hook with no guilt attached. My parents? Taylor asked. You do remember your parents, don't you? Oh, man, your mom is going to have a fit when she sees you like this. She called 5 times yesterday and I told her you were fine. She will never believe I didn't know anything about it. You're lucky your sister came with, your dad wants to give her a tour of the campus, they'll be busy with that. My dad, Taylor pressed. Are you stuck on record? Yes, your dad. You knew your parents were coming, this visit was 2 months in the planning. There they are. Matt looked out the window and pointed to a group that was approaching. Same parents, Taylor whispered. Dad, that's dad. Yes, and I'm sure they'll take very good care of you, whatever this is that you're going through. Matt spoke gently, as one would to a troubled person. Who lives there? Taylor grabbed onto the last straw, like a drowning person, pointing to the door between rooms, which for some reason was still there. An exchange student from Senegal, I think. Just moved in. What does he look like? Taylor asked, with renewed hope. It's a she, and she's pretty. French accent. This can't be happening, Taylor mumbled. Well, I'll be off, I hope you get better. Matt rushed out the door, just as Taylor's parents and sister walked in. Taylor recognized your sister, strangely enough, very well, in fact. They had grown up together after all. She decided to let the situation play out and see where it led her, instead of trying to convince her loving family that her gender had been recently switched. Taylor had always been a rational person, and as such, she put herself in the position of her parents. What would she do if her child, whom she'd always known as a male, suddenly insisted she'd been a girl her entire life, up until the day before? Naturally, her mother would never believe it, no reasonable person would. She decided that until this situation was remedied, she would be male and not question it, for the benefit of avoiding involuntary confinement if nothing else. She spent a wonderful afternoon with her family, engaging in the usual exchanges with her dad, who, as always, expected Taylor to apply herself more. Her mother doted on her and her sister the entire evening with almost fanatical devotion, fussing over their eating habits, comfort, emotions, plans for the future, and trying to anticipate their every need before it was even uttered. As soon as the parents left, Taylor rushed back to her dorm and busted through the door into room number 8, hoping against reason to find her neighbor there. To her surprise, he was. "I thought somebody else already moved in here," she started with an illogical comment. "I got a temporarily reassigned for office hours, it seems you might have some questions?" he asked, unable to contain a smile. "I apologize for my reaction, but I'm not used to talking to myself, I feel like I stepped out of a mirror. How did this happen to me?" Taylor went on attack. "I think it would be a fair assumption that you went through door number 8, despite my repeated warnings," he said, impassible. "Why do I look like you?" "Door number 8 makes your strongly held wish at the moment you pass through it come true. I think the obvious explanation is that you want it to be me. I'm flattered, even though this creates a bit of a logistical problem." "Change me back?" Taylor rushed towards him, worried that he would leave before the problem was solved. "I'm sorry, Taylor, I can't do that. This change is irreversible." "You can't be serious. You can move between life and death, and you can't turn me back the way I was? Do you have any idea what the odds are for a specific gamete to be successful in fertilizing an egg? Astronomical? You might as well ask me to reenact the Big Bang, and have the universe come out exactly the way it is now. I can probably find a female version of you, but it would require a prohibitive amount of time to find the specific female you were before. This you turned out pretty good, if it ain't broke, why fix it?"
"How ain't it broke? I'm male?"
"Well, for one, you're in splendid health and reasonably handsome, if I may say so myself, your family is great, and you are still one person."
"What the heck do you mean?"
"Have you ever heard of triplets? It happened to some people. I'm not exactly sure how things work out in this case, to be honest with you."
"You mean other people went through door number 8, too?"
"Everybody goes through door number 8, in 2 decades of teaching this class, there hasn't been one person who didn't break that rule, it's like an enchantment or something, no matter how many times I say don't, it only makes the temptation stronger."
"But I thought I was going back to my room, I saw the door led to my room. I was sure of it."
"Remember what I told you about the doors? That not all of them are two-way doors? That's why the university policy requires you not to go through the doors alone. You can't tell them apart."
"So, what am I going to do now?" Taylor blurted, in despair.
"You chose a bioengineering major, if I'm not mistaken. I suggest you continue your studies."
"I'm not pre-med?"
"Not in this incarnation." Taylor dropped in the chintz chair that looked even more out of place in the empty room where she was talking to another version of herself. "Not to be insensitive," he commented, "but, as I said, this created a logistical problem for us, and I'm not too pleased about that. I like being me."
"Well, at least you get to keep yourself," Taylor commented, resentful.
"Not exactly. You don't expect two versions of you to walk around campus, do you? Everybody knows you don't have a twin." Taylor looked guilty all of a sudden, so he softened his argument.
"Don't worry, it's not the first time. I'll just have to change again, it happens."
"How are you going to cope with this? Doesn't it completely wreck your identity?" Taylor asked, more for herself than for his sake.
it doesn't make that big of a difference. No matter who I end up being, I'm still going to be me. He looked at the watch. It seems like our time is running out. Do you have any other questions? Taylor didn't even know where to start, or if there was a question that she wanted answered, except for the obvious, which related to what things were expected of her, now that she was male, because she simply didn't know, and she didn't feel different in any way, she was still herself too. Well, if there isn't anything else, he said, showing Taylor the door, which was now open. Are you sure this leads back into my room? Of course I'm sure, but even if I wasn't, what could possibly happen to you that hasn't already? Are you all right, dear? You don't sound like yourself, her mother insisted over the phone. She was of half a mind to get on a train and stop over to see for herself what the problem was. Her confused son-daughter had to use her best cajoling techniques to dissuade her. Taylor wasn't too sure of herself yet. She was trying to adjust to being a guy, and begrudgingly so, because she was still holding up hope that some miracle will happen, and everything will return to normal. Her mother gave up the fight and started going into a long-drawn rendition of her sister's college application process, the schools the latter favored, and how stressful the process was for the entire family. She then gave Taylor a detailed account of all the happenings in the household, told her she missed her terribly, even though they spoke on the phone every day, and reminded her to wear warm clothing, so she wouldn't catch her death. Face it, Taylor. She watched herself in the mirror after having hung up the phone. She just couldn't believe she was looking at somebody else's face. You're a mama's boy. Do you want to borrow my mascara, dude? Your eyeliner is running a little bit over there. Matt punched her in jest when he passed her by and saw her stare at herself in the mirror again. Good God, that hurts. Taylor held her breath until the pain subsided. Does he have to kick me in the kidneys every single time? Why do they do this to each other? She thought about kicking him back, but reconsidered. She had no concept of her own strength yet, and didn't want to risk injuring her friend. How is Christine? She grabbed onto what she thought was a safe subject. She really missed Christine, who had been her best friend, and with whom she'd shared many issues of the heart. What's it to you? Matt answered, shockingly belligerent. Whoa, slow down, dude. I didn't mean anything by it. She's nice and I like her, that's all. Not from where I'm standing, you're not. Don't think I didn't notice, Matt retorted in a gloomy mood. You're crazy, forget I asked. Taylor changed the subject. Great, she thought. One more thing that made it to the chopping block since I turned male? You know full well what I mean. I won't let you mess with Christine like you did with Jessica. Keep away from her. What did I ever do to Jessica? Taylor asked herself, but didn't dare ask the question out loud because she was afraid of what she was going to hear. In all fairness, I love you, bro, but you're a dog, Matt continued. What did I do to Jessica? Taylor's mind started spinning at 100 miles per hour. Although I hear you swore off eating meat, did you have a profound religious experience? Maybe decided to give up other things as well? Matt continued to tease her. Meat is disgusting. Taylor mumbled, a little irritated that she had to justify herself. Whatever you say, man. Just stay away from my girlfriend. After Matt left, Taylor had this strange impulse to apologize to Jessica, even if she didn't remember exactly what she'd done to her, but immediately decided against it, because it felt embarrassing and dumb. The team had finished practice and walked into the locker, and for some unholy reason each and every one of them treated Taylor to a friendly punch to the shoulder, until she was sure there must be a bruise there. What's with these guys and the punching? Either this is the fraternity salute or I'm the designated punching bag for the team. Either way it sucks. I swear to God, the next guy who touches me is going to get a black eye, she thought, morose. What's your problem, man? You don't want to wrinkle that black belt of yours? One of his teammates asked reproachfully, offended that he didn't get punched back. I have a black belt? Taylor thought. That's good news. I wonder what martial art it's in? It's surprising I ever made it to yoga class. These guys look like they would tar and feather me before they allowed me to walk through the door of that studio. How did I end up on the bleeding edge of masculinity as we know it anymore, and I'm going to fall off? An image of his father, frowning at Wiss-like behavior, emerged from the deep recesses of her memory, dragging behind it a groan. Ah. She didn't answer, she just smiled enigmatically. I wonder what other Easter eggs are buried beneath my male persona. This may have been a lucky break after all. Fair warning, man. Jack is really mad about that thing with Marie the other weekend. He swore he's going to beat the crap out of you when he gets the chance, his new friend volunteered information. Or not, Taylor continued her thought. Why does everything hurt? Do I get beat up every day? She wondered as she tried to lift her arm, and stabbing pain ran through her right shoulder. How's that tendon, Taylor? Feeling all right? The coach asked, giving her a slap on the back in passing, with complete disregard of said painful shoulder. Don't mean to rush you, man, but your side has been wide open since you got hurt. We really need that arm. Yes, coach, she answered. I need to find that guy, no matter what, before one of these well-meaning friendlies kills me, Taylor thought. Her former neighbor seemed to have kept his promise to disappear off the face of the earth. Taylor had gone back into the old room number 8 a couple of times and turned it upside down trying to look for a sign or any kind of information about the guy's whereabouts, but found nothing. One morning she woke up and saw that the door between the rooms was gone. After that, she wasn't really sure whether she was remembering what had happened or her frazzled mind had made it all up. She tried to look for the pictures of the door on her phone, but found none. She even risked infuriating Matt and texted Christine to inquire about the ones she'd sent her, but Christine didn't answer. What if I did make all of this up? Between schoolwork and these godless practices that start at 5 in the morning, maybe I just lost it, she thought. Either way, she wasn't considering telling this ludicrous story about how she used to be a girl to anyone, especially now that she wasn't really sure it was true anymore. Fortunately for her, the new neighbor, the Senegalese exchange student, provided a wonderful distraction from all the craziness. The young girl was very beautiful, Taylor thought, with that flawless chocolate skin and the big brown eyes with long eyelashes. She mostly kept to herself and rarely spoke, to avoid revealing a thick French accent that gave a sing-song quality to all of her phrases. Well, the next best thing, Taylor thought. If I'm stuck in this situation, I might as well enjoy the view. She had tried to engage her neighbor in conversation, but her reputation must have preceded her, because the girl next door always seemed too busy to talk. Taylor asked around but couldn't even manage to find out her name, so she decided this was too much work and focused on her studies. Finals were coming up anyway. After the finals week passed and the sportive activities had come upon a lull, as they naturally tended to do in the depth of winter, Taylor found herself with a lot of time on her hands. The problem with having time is that it removes the excuse one has about not examining one's life. She didn't want to churn over what had happened. It seemed futile to linger over a life she was, apparently, never going to have again. The main problem, as she saw it, was that what seemed to be her wish, even though she might not have been consciously aware of it, didn't really come true. She wanted to become her guide, but she didn't become him. She had his body, she had his former life, which was a lot less glamorous than she thought. She had his family, his friends, his major, his hobbies, but she felt in no way different from the girl she used to be. She grabbed pen and paper and decided to run a tally, though a day late and a dollar short, of the pros and cons of her transformation, which, as things presently stood, looked permanent. In the pro column, her life seemed to have condensed the previously diffuse broad distribution of duties and emotional responses around her person, with no strings attached. Many things that were expected of Taylor the girl ceased to exist altogether. Social guilt, niceness, responsibility for others' happiness, divided loyalties between the widespread aspects of her life. She liked being stronger and having the fitness level of a professional athlete, especially since all of these features came as nice surprises, and she didn't have to lift a finger to get them. Unrelated to the gender change, but still in the pro column, since they came with, his father was alive, his mother doted on her every emotional and physical need, she had a sister whom she loved, and her place in society seemed to have shifted to privilege. What she didn't get, the one thing she really wanted, was her teacher's mastery of his own environment, his ability to be centered inside himself, the inner knowing, ease and emotional plasticity that made him who he was. In short, Taylor the girl had acquired for herself a very good-looking male attire to wear. That was definitely not what she wanted. She had never aspired to be a Ms. Bradford the heiress, or a Mr. Bradford the successful, and the more she thought about it, even if she could, hypothetically, become the center of his universe, she didn't want that either. She wanted to bring the same level of mastery of thought, order and purpose into her own life. That being said, as she stood right now, she was male. No more long talks with Christine to unburden her soul, no more daydreaming about the beautiful colors of fall, no more planning to have babies someday. Life's every comfort seemed to be suddenly gone. She still had bruises over a good part of her body, even if the season had ended more than a month ago, and her shoulders still hurt. What she missed the most, however, was that short glimpse she'd had into more. She felt as if the world had opened its doors ajar to show her what was possible, and then slammed them shut in her face. What difference did it make whether she was male or female, an instant success or a hard-working nobody if she never got the chance to wish upon the stars again? Her adventure showed her all the things she was certain about, and didn't know she had no control over, things that can be given and taken on a whim, as if they've never been. What good does it do people to tie their identity to certain circumstances, or apparently intrinsic qualities, like gender, only to find out that those too can be changed with a snap of the fingers? That's why you keep busy, Taylor. Her mother's reproach resonated in her mind, so you don't have time to think about things like these. Taylor thought that was the most outrageous thing she ever pondered in her entire life, the advocacy of being too busy to think. She shook her head and went back to the tally. Male or female? She really didn't like morning practice. At all. Unfortunately, it seemed to be tied to her attendance of the school, so it was non-negotiable. Being able to eat a donut, talk up a cute person, or walk alone at night with no shaming, guilt or fear, good. All the freedom, none of the consequences. Speaking your mind without feeling obligated to be nice, good. No more decisions by committee, good. Getting punched in the kidneys by your friends, bad. Implicit inextricable commitments, really bad. All in all, she had to admit that this experience offered her a unique perspective into an aspect of life everybody takes for granted. Well, since I am now male, I might as well enjoy it, she thought, kicking back and putting her feet up on the bed with the shoes still on. She looked at the phone and saw that her mother had already sent her several texts that day to consult her about the color she wanted her room to be painted when she came home for the holiday vacation, a shining example of too much of a good thing. And to think that only a short time ago even having a message answered by her mother would have been a special treat. Taylor wondered for a second whether her gender change had had anything to do with this attitude adjustment, and immediately dismissed the thought as absolutely ridiculous. She was finally seeing the devastation tragedy inflicts upon one's core personality, and realized she was experiencing her mother the way she would have been if none of the bad things happened to her. What on earth am I doing to myself? I had all these things I wanted to do, in the near and distant future, and now I'm spending all my time analyzing gender differences. It's just a body. In this mindset, the first order of business was to figure out what happened to the doors, and if there was anything she could do to bring them back. She examined the wall, which didn't show any signs that there had ever been a door in it. The likelihood of having hallucinated this whole thing blew her away, the sheer level of detail it involved, including but not limited to a very clear image of her previous appearance, clothing style and mannerisms, was flabbergasting. Taylor shrugged off the thought as just random mental noise, got dressed to go out, opened the miscellaneous box where she now threw everything she couldn't find a place for, and which, interestingly enough, had become the permanent home of her keys, and found herself staring at the tiny shred of concrete which had made it back to normal reality all the way from Sydney. This can certainly drive a person mad, she thought, without fretting over the finding, and decided that the best approach to this problem is to accept the experience as both real and not real, much like her being both alive and dead, as long as she stayed concealed inside a locked room. She shrugged again and went to attend the lecture series on metempsychosis. What's up, man? Matt asked Taylor, who was about to take the seat right next to his. Nothing. Taylor asked, pleasantly surprised that the conversation didn't get into any more detail than that. I could get used to this, she thought. She looked around the lecture hall to see who else was there, and saw her, the next-door neighbor, sitting in the first row, looking a little distant and lost in her thoughts. Any luck with that? Matt teased, startling Taylor. Any luck with what? Oh, Taylor answered, suddenly displeased with the role she now had to play in a potential interaction. I couldn't even find out her name, it's like she's in witness protection or something. It's Cottie, Matt clarified. Christine had coffee with her a couple of times. She doesn't talk much, she's really shy. Christine tried to get her to open up, but she said she didn't have much luck with that either. Knowing Christine, Taylor had all the confidence that any detail that could be pried out of the reluctant conversation partner had been retrieved. Philosophy? Taylor tested the waters, trying to guess her new neighbor's major. Artificial intelligence. Really? Taylor frowned. She mentally thanked Christine for her irrepressible need to meddle in other people's business and hoped she went above and beyond the call of duty to dig up extra details. How did Christine meet her? They go to yoga class together, Matt replied. Yes. Finally, the team is going to give me a pass back into yoga class. Thank you, Cotty, she thought, and then it occurred to her to ask, by the way, how is Christine? Mind your own business. Matt's feathers ruffled immediately. This is ridiculous. Is there an active restraining order that Christine filed against my person, whether it be male or female, so that I can never speak to her again? Having an entire history you are unfamiliar with is debilitating. Taylor tried to remember any interactions with Christine that didn't pass muster, but couldn't. She really missed her friend, their trips to the bookstore, their walks around campus together, their chats, even her meddling. Oftentimes, when she heard a knock on the door, she expected to see Christine come in with a bright smile on her face and a giant box of donuts in her hand, cooking up some excuse to sample them all. She missed asking her opinion on outfits and mellowing out together in the sunshine on the cafeteria patio while they enjoyed their afternoon coffee. It simply felt unfair that she was expected not to see her friend anymore. Her attention got drawn back to Cotty, who looked spellbound by the intricacies of various belief systems with respect to the afterlife and was taking copious notes. Taylor couldn't remember why she ended up attending this lecture when she had already decided to go to the planetarium instead, but she conceded to allow fate and circumstances a little leeway to see what they would bring. She was making an honest effort to adjust to her new life, but without either Christine's cheerfulness or her own excursions out of reality, life had started to look a little bleak. She didn't even understand why she was trying to approach her new neighbor. Cotty was beautiful, but she looked so young Taylor couldn't think of a single thing they could possibly have in common. She couldn't engage her in friendly girl talk, which would have appeared very strange, now that she was a man, and trying to woo her felt completely out of place, since she hadn't adjusted to her male identity yet. She didn't have Christine's gift for friendly gab, and all she could picture when she thought of interacting with her new neighbor was a series of uninspiring small talk, dotted by long and awkward silences. She wasn't sure it was right to expose another person, especially someone as young and innocent as Cotty, to the active construction site that was her life. Taylor herself didn't know what was going to change next, nor could she talk about it to another human being in any way that sounded sane, and she was sure Cotty was already stressed out enough from trying to adjust to a foreign country, a different language, and keeping her grades up without being dragged into the life of a person of uncertain gender whose main interest consisted of searching for doors. Besides, she was sure that Cotty, should she happen to consider cultivating her presence, would want to bring her along to all sorts of social activities, and would want her to meet her other friends, and that would cut into the time Taylor devoted to activities of her own choosing, which she was sure would be a lot more interesting. Oh, my God. I've only been a man for a couple of months, and I'm already thinking like one. There is no hope for humanity. She decided to stay with Cotty as too young to understand and left it at that. Stop staring, dude, you're creepy. Matt whispered in her ear. Besides, I know you're not one for guilt and such, but it's really not fair to Jessica. What's this train wreck of a story about Jessica? How did this person I became get entangled with Jessica in the first place? I simply can't understand it. Are Jessica and I still an item, and she's expecting me to do something about it? She wished she could ask Matt, but since that day when Taylor learned that she was and had always been a he, Matt had adopted a very circumspect attitude towards any behavior that qualified as odd. One more slip and he was going to call Taylor's mother again, and Taylor didn't want to spend hours trying to convince the latter that she was indeed okay. Come on, man. Do the right thing, leave the freshman alone, and let's go grab a cold one. My treat. Awesome. I hate beer. Who comes up with a bitter liquid to drink for fun? She answered. Will do. Lead the way.